Welcome to The Deep Dive, the show that takes complex information and, well, boils it down to the essential insights for you.
Think of it as your shortcut.
Exactly, a shortcut to being well-informed, turning dense research into hopefully some real understanding.
And today, we are diving deep into some pretty advanced mathematics.
We are. We've got an academic paper here, Central Limit Theorems for Spatial Averages of the Stochastic Heat Equation via Malievenstein's Method.
Right. It sounds like a mouthful, but it's a really rigorous piece of work.
And our goal, our mission for you, is to pull out the key findings, explain why they matter, you know, without getting totally lost in the weeds of the technical jargon.
Precisely. So for you, our listener, the learner type, curious about complex stuff, wants to get the gist efficiently, maybe find those aha moments.
That's who we're talking to. We want to give you a clear, engaging audio overview of this research.
Okay, so stochastic heat equations, central limit theorems, Malievenstein.
Yeah, let's unpack this, starting with the main thing. What exactly is this stochastic heat equation the paper talks about? Equation 1.1, I think.
Yeah, at its core, the stochastic heat equation, SHE for short, it describes how heat diffuses, you know, spreads out through space and time, but with randomness thrown in.
Randomness? How so?
Think of the standard heat equation, how temperature evens out. Now, add a random driving force. The paper calls it Gaussian noise. It's white in time, meaning it's uncorrelated from one moment to the next, and spatially homogeneous covariance, meaning its statistical structure is the same everywhere in space.
So like the smooth spread of heat, but it's constantly being shaken or nudged by tiny random effects everywhere.
That's a good way to picture it. Little unpredictable tremors affecting the heat flow.
Okay. Now, the paper mentions DeLange's condition, equation 1.5. What's that about? Is it important?
Oh, absolutely crucial. DeLange's condition is, it's a technical requirement on that spatial randomness pattern.
A requirement?
Yeah, it basically ensures the equation has a sensible, well-behaved solution. It stops things from sort of blowing up mathematically because of the noise.
Ah, okay. A guardrail for the math.
Exactly.
Huh.
And that leads to the idea of a mild solution, which you see in equation 1.8. It's a specific mathematical way to define what we mean by a solution for these kinds of equations, often involving something called the heat kernel.
Right. The heat kernel describes the basic diffusion. So DeLange's condition allows for this mild solution.
Got it.
So heat spreading randomly, what specifically is the paper looking at?
They focus on spatial averages of the solution. So UTX is the heat at time T in position X.
Okay.
They look at averages like, let me get the form, NODE, JX, DSD.
Whoa, okay, break that down.
Sure. Imagine taking a snapshot of the heat at time T, JR. Then you apply some function dollars to the heat value at each point, maybe just the temperature itself or its logarithm or something else.
Okay, applying a function dollars.
Then you average that E value over a really large dimensional box, size null by nullers and so on.
So instead of one point, you're smoothing things out, averaging over a big region. Why do that?
Well, it connects to this idea of ergodicity. That's mentioned around equation 1.9.
Ergodicity. Sounds familiar. I mean, space averages tell you about time averages or something like that.
Loosely, yes. Here, it means if the noise pattern, specifically its spectral measure, doesn't have a strong component at zero frequency, basically, it's not too regular, then as your averaging box nullers gets huge, the spatial average converges to the expected value at a single point.
Okay, so averaging over a huge area gives the typical value. Makes sense. But the paper's title mentions the central limit theorem. Where does that come in?
Right, that's the next question. We know the average settles down, but what about the fluctuations around that average as n gets large? Do those random deviations follow a pattern?
Ah, like how spread out are the values around the average?
Exactly. And specifically, does that spread start to look like a normal distribution? Mm. You know, the classic bell curve. That's the CLT question.
So they look at the difference from the average, scale it up by 9T2, that's the ZNTG thing, and ask if that looks like a bell curve.
Precisely. And the paper stresses they use some heavy-duty tools for this, Malievin calculus and Stein's method.
Okay, advanced math tools.
Yeah, needed to prove these kinds of results rigorously. And importantly, their results aren't just for simple functions dollars. They cover Lipschitz ones and even some tricky ones like jog U or jog U of alpha, as long as U is positive.
Logarithms, powers, okay.
And they specifically mention applying this to the Hofkohl solution of the KPZ equation.
KPZ Carter Parisi Zhang, that's about random growth, like surfaces growing, right?
That's the one. So these heat equation results actually tell us something about fluctuations in certain growth models, too.
Interesting connection. So what are the paper's main results? What did they find about this convergence to the bell curve?
Okay, the core findings are in several theorems. Theorem 2.1 is a big one. It says, basically, if the variant, the measure of the spread of that normalized fluctuation, Austin TG, converges to some positive number, let's call it Balanchine dollar.
So if the fluctuations don't die out completely.
Right, if telesheets is greater than zero, then the distribution of Nellen TG converges to a normal distribution, and it converges strongly in total variation.
Total variation, meaning the whole shape of the distribution gets close, not just like the average.
Exactly. It's a strong form of convergence.
And what kind of functions dollars does this work for?
Theorem 2.1 lays out three cases. First, if dollars is Lipschitz. Second, if dollars is continuously differentiable and meets some moment conditions, basically, its averages behave well. See equation 2.5.
Okay.
And third, there's a specific case if the noise term sigma is zero at zero, and you need a slightly stronger version of Dellen's condition, 1.6, then it holds if Deller dollars is continuously differentiable for positive values and meets those moment conditions.
Right. And they have a way to check if that limiting variance, beta TG, is actually positive.
Yes. Condition 2.7 gives away. If sigma dellus is non-zero for positive sevils, and the derivative dells is always positive or always negative, then beta TG will be positive.
Which is needed for the CLT to be interesting.
Definitely. And corollary 2.2 confirms this all applies to that Hopf-Cole solution for the KPZ equation we mentioned.
Okay, so theorem 2.1 handles spatial averages at a fixed time. What about changes over time?
Good question. Theorem 2.3 addresses that. It's a functional central limit theorem.
Functional.
It means they look at the whole process, data TG, as a function of time, T data.
Right.
They show that this entire random path converges to a Gaussian process, basically a continuously evolving random thing whose statistics are normal.
Wow. Okay. So not just a snapshot, but the whole movie converges statistically.
Pretty much. This holds under conditions on the noise dollars. They need both 1.11 and that stronger Delange's condition,
yeah.
1.6. In a couple of cases, depending on how smooth the derivative dollar is.
That sounds significantly more complex. Does the paper stop there?
No, they go further. Theorems 2.4 and 2.5 actually look at the rate of convergence. How fast does it approach the normal distribution?
Oh, they quantify the speed.
In specific cases, yes.
Yeah.
They measure it using that total variation distance.
Yeah.
Theorem 2.4 is, for the simplest case, midi V, B2 is Z, V equal G, just averaging the solution itself. It gives a bound equation 2.11.
Okay.
Theorem 2.5 looks at the parabolic Anderson model, which is when sigma d gives another rote result for that specific model.
Interesting. So they get speeds in some cases.
And there's also proposition 2.6. It deals with what happens if you let time t dollars increase as the spatial scale on dollar increases. It gives conditions for the variance BNTNG to stay positive, which is important for CLTs in that joint limit, depending on properties of sigma.
Okay, so a very thorough analysis. Now, you mentioned the tools Malleven calculus and Stein's method. Can you give us the elevator pitch for those? Why are they needed here?
Okay. Malleven calculus is roughly like doing calculus, but for random variables that depend on an underlying Gaussian noise process, like the Teteau driving our heat equation, it lets you define something like a derivative, the Malleven derivative.
A derivative for random things.
Sort of, yeah. It measures sensitivity to the noise. Stein's method is different. It's a powerful technique specifically for proving convergence to a normal distribution and often getting rates. It works by checking how closely a random variable satisfies a certain equation that characterizes the normal distribution.
Okay, so Malleven analyzes the random structure. Stein checks for normality.
And they work really well together for quantitative CLTs. CLTs with rates for complicated things like these spatial averages, which are functionals of the Gaussian noise.
Makes sense. The paper also mentions the Clairaut-Cohn formula and Poincaré inequality, equations 3.3, 3.4.
Yep, those are key tools within Malleven calculus. Clairaut-Cohn gives a way to express a random variable using its Malleven derivative. Very useful.
Right.
And the Poincaré inequality relates the variance of something to the average size of its Malleven derivative. It's fundamental for getting bounds.
Got it. Tools within the toolbox. And the paper looked at the Malleven derivatives of the solution of self, theorem 3.2. Why was that important?
Yes. They show that under certain conditions, like sigma non-zero for positive 6-0, and the reinforced Delange condition, this derivative is actually strictly positive.
Positive derivative. Why does that matter?
Because that positivity is often crucial for proving that the limiting variance, that BATG, is actually greater than zero. If the derivative was zero, It might mean the function isn't sensitive enough to the noise in some directions, and the fluctuations might vanish.
I see. So positive derivative means genuine randomness is getting through, leading to non-zero variance.
Exactly. Okay. And Lemma 3.3 and Proposition 3.4 provide important technical estimates on these derivatives needed for the proofs.
Okay. And one last piece mentioned was spatial ergodicity again, Theorem 3.6. How does that tie back into the CLT?
Well, Theorem 3.6 formally proves this ergodicity property for fields related to the SEGE solution, assuming the noise spectrum doesn't concentrate at zero frequency.
Right.
This ergodicity is really the foundation. It justifies why we expect spatial averages over large regions to converge and behave predictably in a statistical sense. It sets the stage for asking the CLT question about the nature of the fluctuations around that limit.
Okay, wow. That was a lot of ground covered. So we try to boil this all down. What's the main takeaway from our deep dive into this paper?
I'd say the key insight is that this work provides a really solid, rigorous mathematical foundation for understanding how spatial averages of the stochastic heat equation behave statistically.
It's not just guessing, it's proven.
Right. They establish these central limit theorems showing convergence to the normal distribution under pretty general conditions on the noise and the function dollars you're averaging.
And even quantify the speed sometimes.
And even quantify the speed in important cases, yes. It demonstrates how predictable statistical patterns, like the bell curve, can emerge from underlying randomness when you look at large spatial scales.
So why is this important for, you know, someone listening who isn't necessarily a mathematician specializing in stochastic PDEs?
Well, understanding systems with random fluctuations in space and time is critical in tons of areas. While the paper is on the SHE, the principles, and maybe even the techniques, are relevant much more broadly.
Like the KPZ connection you mentioned.
Exactly. Growth models, maybe population dynamics, perhaps even finance in some contexts. Anywhere where spatial randomness plays a role. It shows how macroscopic behavior can become statistically regular, even when the microscopic details are chaotic.
It is fascinating, isn't it? This idea that randomness at one level leads to this very specific statistical pattern, the normal distribution when you average over large scales. Order from noise, in a way.
It's a recurring theme in probability and physics.
Definitely. So here's a final thought for you, our listener, to chew on. These theorems are technically about what happens as the spatial scale nanodollar goes to infinity. But what about the real world? What might we see or expect in systems that are very large, but still finite? What are the practical implications or maybe the limitations when applying these infinite scale results to actual finite systems? Something to ponder. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.